Welcome to Coritals. This week, Measuring Relationships Chapter 2, The Communication Matrix, Part 1. The questions this cast answers are, how do I have effective relationships with people? What do I need to think about when I'm wanting to improve a relationship? And what is the measure of relationship quality?
Folks, if you're not already a licensee, I encourage you to become one. Our licensee community continues to grow as we continue to add more value to the license. Just this year, a few months ago, we added the interviewing series and several other products to be included in the $200 spend for a license. And that's an annual spend. It's renewable every year. But the big news was that we added executive tools. We started delivering executive tools casts every 2 weeks. We've had several. We're getting rave reviews, and we're pleased to hear that. And we have many, many more years to go in order to get through all of our guidance on executive tools. So I hope you'll become a licensee. Come to the website and sign up.
This week, we are going to talk more about relationships. And if you've had any Career Tools casts, you only have to have listened to one of them, and you've heard us talk about the importance of relationships. Career success is built on two things, relationships and results. And they're 50-50, meaning that relationships are as important as results. Relationships without results can get you fired because you have to get results. But also, results without relationships can get you fired. If you're awesome and you're hitting all your targets out of the park, but nobody likes you, they will find a way to fire you, even though you've got great results. In chapter one of Measuring Relationships, we talked about the two important measures of relationships, which are quantity and quality. And in this class, we're going to give you a practical way of plotting those measures, of just drawing yourself out a grid and showing where the people that you have relationships with fall on that grid. And that helps you decide where to put your energy with improving relationships. So, Andrew, what's our outline?
All right. Our outline for today is we'll go over the communication matrix. We'll break down the components of the communication matrix in communication frequency, communication quality, and then how to use the communication matrix.
Exactly. So we'll start with what a matrix is. So this communication matrix is the standard 2x2 matrix that you see all over the place in business. I looked up the definition because I didn't know what the definition was. It's a decision support technique where the team plots options on a 2x2 matrix, also known as a 4-block or a magic quadrant. And basically all it is a square divided into 4 by a horizontal line and a vertical line in the middle. So 4 blocks making up a square.
Yeah.
And in this case, the communication matrix measures communication quantity or frequency and communication quality. So if you imagine the 4 blocks, the frequency is on the 2 columns. So the left-hand column is low frequency and the right-hand column is high frequency. And if you're not driving, then drawing this out will help you. And then the rows are communication quality, with the top row being high quality and the bottom row being low quality. So now we've got 4 boxes where the communication frequency is low and the communication quality is low. The communication frequency is low, but the communication quality is high. The communication frequency is high, but the quality is low. And the frequency is high and the quality is high, which is where we want to get to. And if you are a licensee, if you go to the website, you can print out a PDF of this block so that you don't have to draw it out. You can just start drawing. And we've just improved the product of the license. We've just put a whole bunch of things into the license, including the new Executive Tools podcast. So if you're not a licensee and just having this matrix drawn out for you wasn't enough, there's more. So
yeah, now is a great time to be a licensee.
Exactly. And once you have this matrix, you can plot your relationships onto it. And it's obvious that the most desirable boxes, communication quality is high and communication frequency is high, in part because it falls in the box where whenever you see a 2x2 matrix, it's nearly always the top right one is where you want to be. And that's where it is. So now we're going to talk about why you want to be in that box and what difference it makes to have great relationships.
Absolutely. I mean, Wendy, great coverage of the matrix. But when it comes to communication frequency, we'll cover communication frequency first. the more often you communicate, the better your relationship. That may seem really straightforward, but it's not always. And when you think about things, you know, it doesn't matter who you think of, whether it's in your personal or your professional life, the more often you communicate with someone, the better your relationship is. One of the examples that we use when we present is think of your best friend and think of a stranger in line next to you at the grocery store. You may make chit chat, you may have a nice, pleasant conversation, but that's not a very deep relationship because you've only talked to them once ever in your life. And your best friend, you've talked to a lot more. And so this is why, because of this concept, this is why we recommend weekly one-on-ones and peer one-on-ones and more frequent communication, because the less frequent communication means you communicate less about the little things. And it's the little things that are the stone in your shoe of a relationship. It's the little things that get you, not the big things.
It's the fact that you leave the drawer open in the kitchen every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that thing that drives your wife mad. Not your wife specifically, but a wife, a spouse.
Oh, probably
mad.
My wife. Yeah.
and not, you know, the big things. It's always the little things. And you know this if you've ever tried to write one of those Christmas letters at the end of the year. Like you start writing to everybody you know, and you say, "And this thing, these things are the things that happened this year. This child graduated. This one won the state championships. We went on vacation to Hawaii." And then you get stuck, and you're like, "Oh, wait a minute. What else am I going to talk about? What happened in this big year?" And if you think of a year, it's only the really big things that stand out that feel like they're worthy enough to put in the letter. Whereas if you called someone in your family, I bet if you called whichever family member you spoke to yesterday, 10 things will have happened since yesterday that are worth talking about, because those things only need to be so much smaller in order to be worthy of talking about. You know, I slipped in the shower and I bruised my legs, or I made dinner and it was the first time I did this chicken recipe and it was awesome. That wouldn't make the Christmas letter, but it would make a conversation if you'd had a conversation yesterday. It's weird, but the more frequently you communicate, the more you have to communicate about. Otherwise, if that weren't true and you went home every night to your wife or your spouse, you'd have nothing to talk about. Like, right. If only the Christmas letters stuff counted, then you'd never talk to anybody in your house.
Yeah. And when we think about this in a professional realm, think about communicating with someone in your team. Let's say you're waiting for something from a service provider. They promised you the thing, whatever it was. Let's say it was FedEx and they promised you, or they promised to deliver something by Tuesday at 6 a.m. And it's not there. It's Tuesday at 8 a.m. So you call them and you say, "Hey, where's my package?" And for the record, calling FedEx when there are packages is an adventure in and of itself. And they say, "Oh, it's okay. It's on the truck. It's just going to be a bit late, but it'll be there in the morning." It gets to noon and you think, "Well, noon is past morning. So I had no notification that my package is there." So you call FedEx again and you say, "Hey, where's my package?" And they say, "Oh, it fell off the truck, but we put it back on the truck and it'll be there tomorrow." And this goes on and on. And now it's Friday and it was supposed to be there Tuesday. 3 days have gone by. And imagine going to your colleague at lunchtime on Friday and saying, "Hey, FedEx was supposed to deliver on Tuesday and it's not there yet." She's going to say, "What? It's 3 days late. Why haven't you told me? What have you been doing? This package is now turned into a big deal." Whereas if you had sent them a Slack or an IM or a text message, something just short, every time you made a phone call or every time you reached out or every time you got a notification, they wouldn't be mad at you. They would be mad at FedEx, but it's because you're communicating more frequently.
The more often you tell them and give them an update, the more likely it is that that update will be received. They might still be mad, but they're not mad at you. And they'll probably say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not mad at you. It's just, you know, they're just mad at the situation."
Right.
And communicating more frequently works across the board. It doesn't matter whether that person is the CEO or the accounts clerk. It doesn't matter where they are in the company, whether it's sales or legal or production or any other person you can think of. The more often you communicate, the better your relationship. Part of the reason that happens is because when you communicate more frequently, you know what matters to that person.
Exactly. your example of, you know, CEOs, I mean, I think of the relationship between executives and their admins. And, you know, admins know exactly which seat their CEOs want on an airplane. They can tell you in order of preference, the first 10, and they know it every single time their CEO flies. They talk when she lands and she tells her, oh, I was in this seat and it sucked. Or I was in this seat and it was great. Or, you know, the admin says, how was your flight, boss? And the CEO says, oh my gosh, don't ever put me in 6A again. It was awful. They know those details, those little peccadillos, because they talk all the time.
Right after the CEO lands. While the plane is still taxiing, usually.
Yeah. I mean, let's say the CEO is flying from San Francisco to Chicago. She leaves at 9 a.m. She gets in at 3 or 4 p.m. and the admin is gone for the day. Now, no admin would be gone when their CEO is landing. They want to check in. But let's just say for the hypothetical that the admin's gone. And the admin doesn't talk to her boss who lands, gets from the airport to the hotel, goes out to dinner, maybe sees some clients, gets up in the morning and goes to breakfast. Well, the admin and the CEO have a, you know, quick touch base before the CEO's 9 a.m. meeting. Will she mention the issues that she had with the plane seat? No, because she's moved on. 10 things have happened since then, and 10 things are about to happen.
Right. It's only the admin that talks to the CEO when the CEO lands, while that plane is still taxiing, that gets the knowledge of which seat they prefer. If you wait that, it's probably 12 hours, you won't know. Because the CEO, like you said, they've moved on. They're thinking about something else. And then you don't know that that seat is the one that sucks. And if you talk to your CEO every time when they land, which all admins do, the admin is able to book the right seat every time. And so the relationships improve. Because when you don't do that, the CEO gets on a plane, finds it's a seat they don't like, and it's that stone in the shoe thing. It's tiny, right? In most cases, seats in first class are seats in first class, right? They're not that different, but a CEO has a preference. They all do. And if the admin is constantly booking them into seats they don't like, the CEO is thinking, did she do it on purpose? Was there no other seats free? I can't get done what I want to get done. I have to be in the bulkhead and so I can't have my bag or whatever it is that they have a preference for. And then the CEO is mad at the admin, because clearly she didn't book the seat. Whereas if the admin can't book the seat that the CEO prefers and has communicated that, the CEO is not mad at the admin, they're mad at the airline. And
right. And
having your boss be mad at you is not the end of the world. That's not what we're saying, but we're saying the relationship improves and the frustration is targeted at the appropriate person, basically, because of the communication and because of the relationship.
Yeah, I would even say if the CEO has a poor experience in that seat, the only link from the CEO's experience to that seat is you, is the admin.
Is the admin, exactly.
Without other communication or any other information, it's you. Mm-hmm. That's the only link. Another benefit to frequent communication is that you know what kind of mood someone is in. When they're communicating something that could be misunderstood, we all have days when we just don't want to be at work. Someone or something annoyed us, or we got out of bed on the wrong side, and we're just irritable. Then we send an email, and the recipient thinks we're mad at them. We have a great example of this when we do our ECC. We go over email communication practice, and my favorite part is the high D email. And when we pull it up on the screen, people look at it, and the high Ds, just you can see it on their face. They're like, yeah, that's a great email. That's good. And for those of you who haven't been through an ECC, it's two sentences. And it's very direct and to the point, as a high D would communicate. And the high Ds are like, great email. And the high S's and high C's and high I's are like, I don't know. I might pack my stuff if I got that email. That's concerning. But they're not mad. It's just your perception of how they communicate. And so the recipient may think that we're mad at them when we're really just mad at the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, this is the mood I'm in today.
Right. And the people closest to us, the people with whom we communicate the most frequently, they know when to disregard those messages. They know when to give us the benefit of the doubt. The frequent communication, knowing what kind of mood the person is what means you're less likely to read into written communication what isn't there or miss something that is there.
I've told this story before, so if you've heard it, fast forward 2 minutes, but I'll tell it again. I worked for a company, a recruitment company, and we switched IT systems. And as we switched, a lot of the jobs, we had like 4,000 jobs in progress, like jobs we were recruiting for. And as we switched, some of them got messed up. And so we had all of these people on customer sites and like 80 customer sites across the country emailing in and saying, this job should be in this status. This is the candidate we're going for. And there was me, there was about 10 of us who were updating all of the things to make them make it right. And we were doing, I don't know, one a minute. We had hundreds of them to do. And so we were doing it for days. And so we'd get an email and I reply and go, done. Because I'm a high D and done is the only minute. All you need to know is I fixed this for you. So we've been doing it for, I don't know, a week or so. And somebody called and said, hey, I have a problem on this site. Like, what should I do? And I said, oh, do this or do that or talk to this person. And if you can't do it, just call me back and I'll think of something else. And this person said to me, you know, they said you were nice, but I didn't think you would be from your emails. And I was hurt. I was just like, oh, like what should... And I sat there for 2 days trying to work out what my email should have in it, apart from done. And so then I started writing their name, done, and my name, which apparently was my solution for being nice. But I didn't mean, I was just being efficient. I had hundreds of these to get through. I just wanted them to know quickly that their problem had been solved. And yet I was sending this message. And yet the people who knew me well knew I was nice. They knew that, mm-hmm. that I would be helpful if somebody called me. And that was just because with some people, I'd communicated a lot. And with this person, I'd never communicated before. So, you know, you can read stuff into emails that's not there, and you can miss stuff that is there because you don't know that person well.
Absolutely.
Folks, if you harbor ideas about growing in your organization, you might want to understand some of the context of your growth and development, and you might want to consider attending our IM conference, which is this year, October 27th and 28th in Chicago. It's $3,000. We have a few slots left, and it's specifically for managers who want to become an executive. Although we had a few individual contributors at our first event 2 years ago in 2019. This is the 2020 conference that we had a delay to 2021 for reasons I'll let you guess at. It's a smaller group. We don't allow more than about 50 people in the room. It's 2 days long. And maybe the single biggest outcome, according to people that came to the first one, is the strengthening of their network. And if you look up at the top of your organization, I promise you the networks that your executives have built play a huge role, even more than they already do in your career, in their success. So take a look, October 27th and 28th in Chicago, the IM Conference.
That brings us to relationships at work. Relationships at work are not personal. You know, you're not friends. That said, they can be personal in the sense of a relationship between two people rather than two roles. For instance, if you're the accounts receivable clerk and there's a customer accounts payable clerk that you get regular payments from, you have a relationship based on your roles in the two companies that's prescribed. You are going to work together because of your roles in your organizations. It has to work within whatever legal framework there is between the two companies. If you communicate regularly, and by communicate, we do not mean only by email, you'll have a personal relationship that allows for things to go wrong. And if you've ever worked in accounts receivable or accounts payable, they will go wrong.
Yes.
And because of a relationship that is built on frequent communication, you can resolve those issues without it becoming a legal issue or a big, you know, a big deal.
Yeah, when a payment doesn't arrive for an invoice and you think it's coming, That's a legal issue in that the contract often says the payment must arrive within however many days. But if you're the two clerks and you've had a conversation and said, look, I sent it, but it's been a federal holiday in my country that it's not in yours, and so it's delayed a day, then it's not a big deal. And it's only by having those conversations. I frequently miss holidays here in the US because I don't know they're coming up. You know, July the 4th doesn't occur to me until somebody says, you know, we're off on Monday. And I say, oh, yeah, why? And when I think about it long enough, I can work out why. So it's really easy to miss holidays in other countries and not know that something will be delayed a day or 2 days unless you're talking.
Absolutely. You know, I've had an interesting experience. I worked for large organizations before I worked for Manager Tools. And at Manager Tools, at least by contrast, things move so much faster. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think of accounts payable and getting approvals and the process when I've worked in, you know, the large organizations I've worked in, it's a daunting process. And so if you had an accounts payable clerk and an accounts receivable clerk that work at different size companies, mm-hmm. they're going to have different experiences and different expectations in terms of time and process-wise. And so even just that, I could see, you know, you need that frequent communication to understand, because if you haven't worked in a large organization and you've only worked in small organizations where things happen quickly, mm-hmm. you won't understand.
Yeah, there's five layers of approval.
Right. Everything is moving through the process. It's not that we don't want to pay you. It's that we are beholden to our processes.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. Yeah, here we just give you a credit card and tell you we trust you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because we talk about that, you know, often because we work with so many large organizations. And so when we get payments, sometimes it takes a while. And, you know, but we have a standard here that if we have a vendor that we owe money, I mean, we pay them right away. Mm-hmm. And it's just because we can do that. We're nimble.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And to pick up on the two things that people maybe picked up on as we went past them fairly quickly, you are not friends with the people at work. There is a podcast about being friends, especially between managers and directs. There's a difference between being friendly and being friends. And being friends gets you into trouble. Being friendly is the standard. So there is a podcast where Mark explains that. Go listen to it because he explains it better than I would. And the other thing is email. Email does not build relationships. In fact, if you are counting frequency, which we're going to talk about in a minute, take email out of the count, because email is so poor, so barren in terms of relationship building that it might as well not count. And it's often a negative force. Like my emails to that person were giving her an impression that wasn't true and was giving her a negative impression of me. So we'll ignore email.
And I think that's a principle that Mark talks about a lot. I think of even just, you know, in the interviewing series, Mark talks about, we're not trying to make you stand out, right? Think of like your attire, right? Your attire shouldn't make you stand out. It just should not be a negative. Exactly. And that's kind of the same principle with email, is you're not going to make a lot of headway with this email that you're drafting 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 times. Mm-hmm. You're just trying to not make it a friction point in the relationship, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that makes me think of all the people that do sit there for hours with their email. And you might as well spend that time by phoning the person and talking on the phone or you know, leaving them a voicemail that has some inflection and things, like, rather than trying to make an email do all the work, because it never can.
Yeah. And it's the same thing on Slack. If anything, you're more aware of it on Slack or instant messaging systems, because you can see when the person is typing.
Yes.
And you can see that they're Andrew is typing.
Yes.
Andrew is typing. And then it goes away.
And then it starts again. What, Andrew is typing.
What happened? Yeah, then Andrew is typing. And then you get this, you know, one sentence response and you're like, you were typing for like 7 minutes. What happened there?
That took a long time.
Yeah. But you can see that you can see that in instant messaging or Slack. You don't see that in email. So all you see is the finished product. And so you don't know any of that kind of behind the scenes stuff.
There's no assumption. We're just on the end of a podcast, and we thought this was going to be two parts. So we'll stop here on frequency and give you a week to think about all the people you communicate with and how frequently. And then next week we'll come back and we'll start with communication quality.
Excellent.